Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
There are a million reasons South Dakota pheasant hunting is the greatest. The birds, sure, but more than that, it's the camaraderie. It's gravel roads and good company. It's walking a field with a dog out front and your favorite people by your side. That's why South Dakota's the greatest. Make a memory this season in the world's best pheasant country. Enter for a chance to win a South Dakota hunt for you and your crew, plus free Shields gear at huntthegreatestsd.com.
Fall is here with the chill in the air, the Twin Cities Marathon, and the changing leaves reminding us daily. Welcome to Sunday Take, a weekly show about issues and insights on Minnesota politics. I'm your host, Blois Olson. A big week in Washington and in Minnesota. It's starting to feel a lot more like Washington with a stalemate over a special session on COVID frontline worker relief. We'll talk to two major players, Senator Karen Housley and House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler. And we'll start off the show with AJ Awad. He's running for mayor of Minneapolis. And for the next couple weeks, we'll talk about the big issues in the two big cities with more candidates and advocates on the various charter issues. Thanks for tuning in. Grab a fresh cup of coffee. Sunday Take is next.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson, here on News Talk 830 WCCO. One of the topics that all of Minnesota is following right now, in fact, people around the country are watching, is the mayoral race in Minneapolis. And there's been some coverage of the big issues, but there hasn't been a lot of in-depth conversation with the candidates who are running to replace Mayor Jacob Frey. Of course, Mayor Frey is running for re-election. Joining me now for the first cup this morning is AJ Awad. He is running for mayor. And on this Sunday morning, while I have my coffee, he's having tea. AJ, will you start? Because I just learned about kind of tea, milky, cinnamony tea last year. And I wanted to just kind of have you describe what your routine is here in the morning, what your beverage of choice is.
Yeah, so I'm not actually big on coffee. I drink a lot of tea, specifically Somali tea. I'm fortunate enough, I think my wife makes the best Somali tea in town.
Got it.
And typically I think the recipe has a lot of spices, cinnamon, cloves, other delicacies, and the particular tea bag we use is the Kenyan tea bag. So it's cross-section of the whole East Africa is represented there.
Awesome. AJ, why are you running for mayor?
Well, that's a very, very important question. And for me, I recognize that the city is divided more than ever. And the current leadership has embarrassingly failed the city. I think we need to get away from performative politics. And in this moment, in this really important civil rights moment, where we can address some of the most pressing issues facing our society and country at large, for us to really have a fresh new start and have someone that's credible to actually lead us on this front.
When you say performative politics, what do you mean by that?
So I'm not a politician. I've never held elected office, though I've run for Ward 6 special election last year. And my experience thus far for many of the political operatives, I think we do too much to satisfy identity, you know, checklists, talk and scream about things. But when it comes to actually getting together to do the work, we're too oftentimes just focused on fighting each other, even though the city of Minneapolis is overwhelmingly progressive. And I think that really has to do with people wanting to be seen in the right, and not necessarily ultimately chasing to do the right. And that's what I mean about performative politics in the city of Minneapolis.
As you're out campaigning this year, what are the top issues? Public safety has obviously been a major discussion point. It's a major debate. It's on the ballot. Along with public safety, what do people stop you to talk about? Or what's the first thing on their mind right now?
Outside of public safety, housing is the other thing that is definitely on top of people's mind. I think it hurts many of us and many of our neighbors to see the dozens of encampments around the city, the levels of homelessness and desperation. And I think that is at least in the forefront of my mind when I'm talking to voters and what I'm hearing much on the ground. And those are also interlinked with, you know, the very important crisis of drugs and opioids within the city, and especially our youth. So those are, I think, issues that intersect from every neighborhood and all demographics. And I think those are ones that I'm very much focusing on outside of public safety.
You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm Blois Olson. My guest is AJ Awad. He's a candidate for mayor, and he has a platform. His campaign theme is Better Minneapolis. He's clear in his website that he will vote yes on question one about executive mayoral power and legislative power at the council. He'll vote no on question two, establishing a new Department of Public Safety. And he'll vote yes on the city council enacting some sort of rent control ordinance. AJ, being strong on having a strong mayor system, you talk about kind of the divide in the city, the divide between the council and the mayor currently is well established. How does that, you know, question one, change that dynamic or help that dynamic of the relationship between the council and the mayor?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I actually don't frame it as a strong mayor. I think the accurate term is a traditional mayor with aligns like all major cities in the city, in the country. And to that point, I mean, for me, one of the main frustrations and what the commission report, the work group focusing on the department heads, and when the department heads were interviewed, I mean, personalities should not be dictating whether we can navigate, you know, turbulent waters during a crisis. And that's exactly what we have in our current structure, where I would say bloated city council who often operates outside of the normal standards of separation of powers. And what I mean by that is the current structure, there's a lot of undermining, there's directives. From my conversations with people in MPD and our security apparatus at large, city council members are giving direct orders contrary to the mayor. I mean, these type of, I would say, systematic fault lines are problematic. And what the amendment does and what it tries to attempt to do is get us back to a corrective measure along the lines of most functioning and efficient, you know, cities around the country. And it's not going to be a strong mayor. It's going to be an accountable mayor where we know where the buck stops. And we understand that when there's a crisis or we're trying to hold somebody accountable for a failure in leadership, they're not playing political football between city council and the mayor's office. And I think that this is going to improve the overall, I think, well-being of the delivery of services for residents, and ultimately give them exactly what they have not had for decades, which is ultimate accountability when we have issues in leadership.
AJ Wed's my guest here on Sunday Take. We're talking about the Minneapolis election. He's a candidate for mayor. AJ, you talk about the majority of the city being progressive. But the spectrum of, quote, progressive seems to have really grown aggressively, I would say, in the last 5 to 8 years, including, you know, folks involved that, you know, proclaim themselves as socialist versus kind of your traditional working class Democrat compared to, you know, maybe your more environmentalist Democrat or wealthy Democrat. When you talk about kind of uniting those groups, especially on issues like public safety, housing, do you see a way that everybody kind of feels comfortable, or, you know, is it somewhere between, I don't know, the middle of progressivity and the far left of progressivity that there has to strike a balance? Because within progressive movement, there's a lot of tension right now.
Yeah, there is a lot of tension, and notably so. I think it's actually undermining the ultimate goals that we have as progressives. I think it's not, I would say it's not a stretch to say all progressives want communities of colors to really feel validated, be valued, and have equality of justice when it comes to dealing with law enforcement. And that is ultimately where we all start from. And in that regard, I think the place where we can have, I think, cooperation between the different factions of the progressive spectrum here in the city is to all understand that community of colors should ultimately be the ones leading on this issue, right? And whether our specific agendas and policy interests, whether it's on other issues that intersect with this current moment, as we all understand, I think most political operatives and actors in the city have other issues that they want to, you know, get passed or made sure is ensured through the moment that we're in. And I just want to remind the people of Minneapolis and all of the other different factions within the city, what we have on our hands is a moment to have racial healing and honestly build a system where everyone feels included and valued. And that ultimately, I think, if communities of color are leading on that, and, you know, with all due respect, all my, you know, I would say the 60% of white voters in the city, you know, take a back steep step and just respect those boundaries and understand that they're leading, that this issue affects them, then there's a lot of synergy. I don't think that there's going to be much conflicts of interest. However, when there are, you know, I would say for all intended purposes, hijacking of the moment to serve other, you know, purposes, whether it's in line with the far left or the centrist or the more conservative factions in the city, it ultimately harms the very communities that everybody is propagating to support and be an ally for. So I'm hopeful and optimistic that there is a possibility. I think that I have the leadership and credibility and honestly the nuance between the different, I would say, parts of the spectrum here in the city to hopefully bring us to answer this issue once and for all, rather than passing the buck and honestly, you know, getting either scared on one side or getting overzealous on the other.
I think you kind of touch on what is one of the flashpoints of emotion right now. And the way you talk about it, I think, is interesting because I think it translates in real time. This is what I've said about public safety right now, is that many people know that there needs to be some changes, but the lack of specificity or the what does this look like when we get there becomes really hard for people to put their head around in the reality of today. And the reality of today is that we're in a major crime wave in the city. Safety is not a given in many neighborhoods that just 2-3 years ago it was. And then you kind of relate that to kind of the police force being understaffed compared to where it's supposed to be. What's your solution? If you're mayor on day one, what do you outline as the solution that kind of gets our arms around the current public safety issues of crime and gang warfare today and gets us to that next level that communities of color trust?
Yeah, so you actually phrased it well. I mean, to think about it in the short term for the next mayor, really, they have to ramp up recruitment. I mean, that is an obvious. And that really means really more, you know, getting someone with the credibility to cheer up and really, I would say, rebrand and make sure that officers want to work for the MPD and want to work for the mayor. And in that regard, I think that's going to be my main focus. But in terms of the long-term things, I mean, so I take a step back. I don't think we necessarily have a policing issue. I think what you said in the latter part of your question of trust is really what the central issue is. I don't think communities of color are really, really too focused on, you know, the prescriptions as much as as the validation, right? I think the disconnect for many, I think, is when you're in communities of color and you have no trust in law enforcement, or you are raised as an adolescent because of your culture in the communities of color's hesitancies because of law enforcement, that paradigm and that worldview is totally different. And to have a valid policing system, that has to be the first thing that is addressed, is saying, how do communities of color do not see this as a white man's policing force? And how do they see it as their policing force and our policing force? And to do that, you have to do deep, I would say, have deep conversations that may lead to uncomfortable circumstances talking about.
AJ, I don't want to interrupt. I want to be mindful of time here.
No, go ahead.
Because people talk about deep conversations, and let's just say you're elected mayor. We will be a year and a half of deep conversations, a year and a half of crime that people are afraid of.
Yeah.
When do the citizens start to see the impacts of the deep conversations?
Yeah, no, so I mean, I think you have to separate the two. Deep conversations for me are the answering the long-term goals and making sure that the system is valid for everybody in the city, right? The short terms are not necessarily deep conversations. That's just doing the right thing, making sure that we have the proper, actual, adequate force, and making sure that they are patrolling and keeping our neighbors safe. To do that, though, runs into the question of why do we have a huge level of attrition and people leaving the force? And that comes down to the failure of leadership and the fact that no one really trusts the current mayor. And that has to change. We have to have someone that has the capacity to at least make the endeavor or raising your hand to becoming an officer something cool again. And without doing that, I don't think any mayor has any realistic chance of decreasing crime without the proper staff. And that to me is just the basic, simple, you know, numbers. We just got to have more officers on the ground. And this directly relates to the literature. I mean, I studied criminology as a sociologist. I went to law school, of course, but as a criminologist, I mean, the literature is very clear. More police actually slave Black lives. That's not, you know, in factual, that's empirical. And it also reduces the rates of high crime, violent crimes, murders, rapes, burglaries, right? So let's stop being, you know, irrational and be sensible. And to me, those are the simple things that the city needs to digest as the measures moving forward. And we need to have a mayor that can communicate that effectively, build the coalitions to keep that credible, so we don't have to worry about nonstop protests that undermine recruiting more officers, right? And I think that's the dynamics that are in the city right now. And if we don't change that, if we don't change how we address police, if we're not really thinking about police as people that are serving us, and we're not being able to rebrand them in that and give them the credibility, because we are going to take those long, deep conversations approach to making sure that communities of color are the ones ultimately validating the system that was never validated by them.
Got it. AJ Awed's been our guest. AJ, if people want to learn more about your campaign, where can they find out?
They can go to Awed4, that's the number 4, mayor.org. They can also go to AJ4. Mayor on our Facebook, Twitter is Awed for MPLS, as well as Instagram. Please do volunteer, register to volunteer. This is a great moment. It's a big opportunity for the city, and we should all meet this moment with a true fresh start and a new leadership with the capacity and comfortability to lead.
AJ Awed's been our guest. He's running for mayor of Minneapolis. When we come back, more talk about Minneapolis and mayor candidates on Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. Oh.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome back to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm Blaise Olson, your host. For the second cup today, we are joined by House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler. Majority Leader Winkler's been at the table and a key part of these COVID relief negotiations for frontline workers. And for the last couple of weeks, we've seen there's kind of been a stall, but everybody involved says they've made great progress. So I want to get an update from him on where he thinks negotiations stand and when we might have a special session. Majority Leader Winkler, thanks for joining me.
Sure. Happy to be with you.
So from your perspective, Republicans came out on Thursday with a very specific plan. DFLers pushed back, some frontline workers pushed back. Everybody says people are close, but you need 7 out of 9 votes of the 9 panel members for this, which means it has to be a bipartisan solution. Where do you think things are and how close are they?
Well, first of all, we need to have basically a unanimous view on how to do this, because the people on the panel represent the majority and minority in the House and Senate, and all 4 need to sign off in order to have a special session with the governor. I don't think the governor will call us back unless everyone is in agreement on the front end. So from the beginning, we've been focused on getting consensus. We fundamentally have a difference of opinion on how many workers to include in the $250 million fund. And we are working hard on the Democratic side, not to pit workers against each other, but instead to try to draw a broader circle and find a way to bring more people in and recognize the critical work done by our healthcare workers.
One of the things that when you think about kind of the fundamentally different views, Republicans have said that they think, you know, those people who worked, you can define the front line so many different ways, but They've clearly narrowed it down to a group and they want it to be a quote significant payment. Is there a chance that one of the compromises is that there's some additional funding that allows a significant payment to more people?
Absolutely. Democrats would say we should have a larger pool if that's what it takes. I think that Republicans are pretty firm about $250 million. I think even within $250 million, there are plenty of ways to compromise. And in fact, even on a day when we had a press conference from Republicans, we were able to have a conversation, Senator Karen Housley and I, about finding pathways forward. So we are far from ending our conversation. But I think the real issue is a lack of initiative on the part of Senate Republicans as they have new leadership and negotiating a special session with Tim Walz is challenging when they are also considering trying to fire the health commissioner.
Yeah, we'll get into that with Senator Housley as well. But obviously, commissioners are on the table. The governor has to call the special session. He proposed agricultural relief for the drought. Any other issues that could creep into this special session that you're sensing or hearing?
I don't think there should be any others. And in fact, the more issues we put on the table, the harder it is to reach an agreement. So I have been focused on narrowing the scope to the $250 million, figuring out a way to get that out the door, and trying to get a check into the hands of frontline workers in Minnesota. And I think that's what everyone's focus should be.
One of the other issues with the workforce right now, and you have a long history of representing workers from the minimum wage to other issues, is just, you know, we had a labor shortage before the pandemic, especially in healthcare and childcare and some of those service professions. Is there any thoughts or anything you're hearing from healthcare on what they need to help that's above and beyond maybe wages? Because obviously wage pressures are real right now, but they're in, you know, they're in favor of workers for the first time in a long time. Any other kind of changes as we look ahead? We knew there'd be a worker shortage, a labor shortage with baby boomers retiring, et cetera. But my sense is that this labor issue is going to stick around for a year or two, and the legislature is probably going to have to address it in multiple ways.
I think if you look at the retirements and the healthcare workforce and the overall demand for workers, I think it's a longer term challenge. It's a 10 to 15 year challenge with demographic changes driving it. And the best solution, or the only real substantial solution, is immigration, bringing more workers into the economy. Of course, that requires the federal government to act and change our immigration system, or for the state to help make it more possible for workers to come in and have an opportunity to live safely in our communities. But immigration is really the issue. We need more numbers of people coming in order to fill the demand for jobs. And I also think we'll see what happens post-pandemic as people's attitudes towards work changes again, and people begin to look at career pathways and what's appealing to them. Healthcare in many ways is always appealing because it's recession proof and it is a long-term career. Whether people feel like with the politicized response to a pandemic, it's quite as appealing as it used to be, I think we don't know.
My guest is Ryan Winkler. He's the House Majority Leader. He's a Democrat. We're talking about the COVID relief package. Any sense of a timeline if there's agreement on the COVID relief package and Republicans set aside, the dismissal of Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm, that you see where the special session could get called?
I think it could be called really maybe about a week after we reach an agreement in principle. Okay. On the frontline worker pay, it takes probably a week for the bill to be drafted and things to be organized and a session to be called and so forth. But, there's just a lack of deal-making urgency on the other side that makes it very hard to predict when we will be able to get this done.
Got it. Any plans this coming week to meet formally, or is it all behind the scenes now?
We are considering a hearing this coming week. Senator Housley and I are going to talk more and find out if there's a way for us to reach an agreement and hopefully present that in a public hearing. I don't know that having more public hearings to air out differences of opinion is going to accomplish very much. Much like having dueling press conferences doesn't actually move us forward in a negotiation. And so I hope we just stay focused on talking through a way to get this done.
You floated the idea that you're thinking about running for Hennepin County Attorney. This week, Mary Moriarty announced she was running. Any further thoughts on your future?
I am leaning in the direction of running for Hennepin County Attorney, and I expect more information to come.
Sounds great. House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler, thanks for joining us on Sunday Take.
All right. Thank you.
When we come back, Senator Karen Housley will discuss the COVID relief package. And as you just heard, Majority Leader Winkler, these two are talking actively about trying to get this thing done in the next couple of weeks. I'm Blaise Olson on News Talk 830 WCCO.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm Blaise Olson, your host. For the final cup today, we're going to talk to Senator Karen Housley about this COVID relief package and why it hasn't progressed. We're now into October. The deal was supposed to be done in September, and Republicans held a news conference on Thursday laying out a very specific proposal. It got some pushback, and I want to understand kind of where Republicans stand and maybe what the holdup is. Senator Karen Housley, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, boys.
So, Senator, we kind of watch from behind the scenes. There's been these hearings. There's been a lot of testimony. You know, where do negotiations stand with the House, and or what was the intent of the news conference? Was it kind of to spark things to get things back on track?
Well, things have been going really, really well. I know it's never as fast enough as people want, but we've had a really good relationship with the House and the commissioners, and the committee met 8 times over this interim, and we heard some really heart-wrenching stories from all essential workers. Back when the pandemic started, the governor deemed 1.3 million workers in Minnesota as essential. So when the federal government gave us $250 million, to distribute among essential workers, that this is the language that came with it, had an increased risk of exposure to COVID and a significant time period with their exposure to a sustained increase. So we listened to all of the testimony, so many different sectors, but one sector really, really stood out to us. And those were the ones that not only did they face the fear of possibly contracting COVID or coming in contact with COVID every day, they actually knew every single day when they went to work, they were walking in to a facility where COVID was present. And not just that, they would have sustained and intimate exposure to COVID and patients with COVID. And those would be our, our long-term care workers, those in our nursing homes and our assisted living, and our healthcare workers. The nurses that showed up every single day, knowing they were walking into COVID, double masking, PPE, goggles, taking care of these vulnerable folks who were sick. And so when you're given $250 million and we've got 1.3 million workers, you kind of have to focus it somewhere in order to give them a meaningful hero pay reward for the work that they've done over the last 19 months.
You know, one of the groups that pushed back were the nurses. Do you sense that one of the feelings is, even though the federal government determined the $250 million, that in order for it to be meaningful, you have to have a narrow group? Or is it just those nurses who came in contact with COVID? Is that where you start to delineate kind of the differences between who would be eligible and who wouldn't?
Well, even the nurses are divided, and the ones that showed up after us on the press conference on Thursday that were representing the union, that the union nurses only represent 20% of the nurses across the whole state of Minnesota. So there's another 80% that were before us in committee and said, please, this hero pay of at least $1,000, make it meaningful, would mean a ton to us. We heard testimony from folks that have said, in their 30-year career, this is the most fearful they've ever been and the most devalued they've ever felt. They are absolutely exhausted. They are right. so tired. They are leaving the profession. They're contemplating leaving the profession. Their morale is at the lowest it's ever been. This would be a huge boost to help retain other nurses, to help retain our long-term care workers, because especially in our nursing homes and our assisted living, they're having to close wings and buildings because they don't have enough workers, because they are absolutely exhausted and just walking away. So this hero pay needs to be a meaningful amount. And like we said in the press conference, if the Democrats and the governor want to add more people to it, they can explain to the nurses and the long-term caregivers why they're not getting $1,200. And the more people you add to the pool, the less numbers you're going to get, less dollar amount.
My guest is Senator Karen Housley here on Sunday Take. We're talking about the COVID relief pay for essential workers, the debate that's been going on at the Capitol. You know, you raise a really important and I think story that isn't being covered that much, and that is the worker shortage in healthcare. And it existed before the pandemic. Has there been, either separately or part of this task force, any sense or conversation about what we need to do? Because especially long-term care had a worker shortage before. And now obviously with labor market where it's at and people wanting to change careers or change professions or being just exhausted, which I can only imagine, that shortage is tougher, which means, you know, we might not have a place close to home for our parents to go. And so have you guys talked about that? Because you talked about kind of retention, but there's going to be this ongoing issue with getting people to work in healthcare just because of a worker shortage.
Absolutely. It is dire. One of the long-term care workers said, we have been living a nightmare for more than just 19 months, doing double shifts, working days in or 10 days in a row, a double shift, giving your kids to the next door neighbor because you have no childcare. It is pretty, pretty bleak in those industries. I did have a meeting with Commissioner Malcolm on Friday, and she said, she too, we're trying to come up with some solutions, and maybe there's something we could do if the governor calls a special session. When he had his emergency powers, we had the opportunity to bring nurses in from other states, but once mm-hmm. the emergency powers ended, that ended. So there's talk of extending that. There's okay. also, we're talking to our federal folks. I mean, if we could reform our immigration laws, that would be huge for our long-term care facilities because they have a cap on how many immigrants they can have work in them. Okay. So working on it, it was a problem before, and now it's gotten 40% worse since the pandemic. So again, that's why this hero pay would be so meaningful for those who have stuck it out, and just to let them know that their work really has been recognized by the state of Minnesota.
You brought up Commissioner Jan Malcolm. One of the side issues that came out, a couple of your colleagues said that, you know, perhaps she should be questioned during this next special session. Any thoughts on where that stands or your view on her role or her job going forward?
Well, only the governor can call us back for a special session, and he did it 8 times when he wanted to renew his emergency powers. So we're calling on the governor to call us back for special sessions so we can get some of these emergency things done, especially the frontline worker bonus pay. He cannot be attaching the two. If he wants to play politics with this frontline worker pay that we all voted bipartisanly in the legislature to pass this money and get it out to these people. My hope is we can get it out to them before the holidays, get this process set up and get the money to them. But we need the governor to call a special session. And if he wants to play politics, he can explain to the healthcare workers why he's not getting them the money.
Any thoughts? You just said you met with Jan Malcolm. Any thoughts on the job she's done or the job she had to do during the pandemic?
You know, there's been some, when we have our caucuses with our side, there has been some issues with Commissioner Malcolm, and some other commissioners, to be frank. So I don't know where all of that stands, and I haven't asked members where they are on it, but, that's not the purview I was tasked out to do, which is the frontline workers and get this $250 million out.
Got it. On a lighter note, Senator, How are the Arizona Coyotes going to do this season?
Well, they've got a new head coach. Luckily, they retained their old, my husband, assistant coach, and they've actually done really well in preseason. They don't have a lot of big stars or anything, but they're working with a lot of young no-name players. They still have Phil Kessel, but I am hoping they have a good season because happy husband is a happy house.
Happy winning hockey means a happy husband and a happy house, right?
Absolutely. Let's cross our fingers on that.
Well, I know that we're all anxious for the NHL season to start, and I will be keeping an eye on the Coyotes, especially because of Phil. So, Senator Housley, thanks for joining us today on Sunday Take.
Always good to talk to you, Blaise. Have a good day.
Keeping up with the flood of news every single day can be quite stressful. There is climate change happening. There's the pandemic, labor movements, Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend. Hi, I am Gideon Resnick, host of Crooked Media's What a Day. Each week, Trevelle Anderson, Priyanka Arabindi, Josie Duffy, Rice, and I are going to break down the biggest news stories of the day in a way that hopefully doesn't always make you want to cry. New episodes of What a Day drop every weekday at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are a million reasons South Dakota pheasant hunting is the greatest. The birds, sure, but more than that, it's the camaraderie. It's gravel roads and good company. It's walking a field with a dog out front and your favorite people by your side. That's why South Dakota's the greatest. Make a memory this season in the world's best pheasant country. Enter for a chance to win a South Dakota hunt for you and your crew, plus free Shields gear at huntthegreatestsd.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.